Hi, I'm Danny. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. So I had a pretty good childhood up to about 8 years old. I was sexually molested by two grown men, and that was a turning point for me. I became a real angry individual. You know, of course, they threw a bunch of medications at me and stuff, and I started smoking cigarettes at 10, drinking alcohol at 10. I was a full-blown cocaine addict by the time I was 13 years old. Came from a pretty good home. My family didn't understand me. Nobody understood me, you know, of course. I didn't really understand myself. And my life was very tumultuous because of my choices, of course. You know, I chose to be angry. I chose to hate the world. I hated myself. I couldn't even look myself in the mirror. And in and out of schools everywhere. I even got kicked out of the juvenile detention center school. That's crazy, right? And where do you go from there? And on and off the streets, ran away from home, did a lot of drugs, a lot of heavy drinking. And I got into high school, and it just got a lot worse because I wasn't one of those guys that fit in. You know, I wasn't the jock. I was real smart. Took my SAT in fifth grade, scored a 1200, enough to get into any college. And I was very smart, but I was very much a loner. And I just didn't like people, you know. And I'd rather stay in my room and read my books. And in high school, I learned that fighting was kind of fun for me. That's kind of crazy, right? But it served me well for a long time, you know, in my crazy mind. And it ended with my high school days ended with me getting into altercation, and the vice principal got hurt, and they sent me to jail. And I was 16. I was in juvie. They're talking about trying to put me in the big man jail, you know. And I'm like, oh man, you know. My uncles were all in the biker scene, and I looked up to them. I thought that was a cool shit, you know. I thought that's what we need to do, you know, and bust some heads and ride some bikes and, you know, do crazy shit. Well, I got out of that charge by taking some stupid tests, and I was put out on the street immediately. My family said, "That's it. You're a man now. Go be a man." And so at 16 years old, I was out on the street on my own. And, my life just kept going further downhill. Picked up my first charge in 1995. I spent 3 years in prison. Came out, and they sent me to a maximum security prison, Clemens Unit in Brazoria, Texas. Pretty rough. And there my anger helped me survive. That's all it did, you know. And I came home an even angrier person. And within 10 months of being home, I had an aggravated robbery, a deadly weapon charge, and was facing 25 to life. And by the grace of God, somehow they gave me 10, and I took it. And yeah, I had some friends that we did this robbery together, and you know I thought they were my best friends. They really did. But, you know, they were just my drug friends. And when we got busted, we all three got arrested, and I ate the charge for everybody. I said, "Look, I'm still on parole. I'm going back anyways. I'm going to take the charge. Y'all go do something with your lives." And so I did 9 calendar years on that charge. And, you know, never could get my head right, man. I didn't understand what the hell was wrong with me. You know, I just horrible shit in my head all the time, you know. And so I should have been home after about 2 years, but because of my problems and my attitudes and stuff, I ended up doing 9. And I came home after 9 years, and I was, man, if I hated the world before, man, I loathed it now, you know. And And I hated society. I hated the people that drove around in nice cars and lived in nice homes, you know, and that included my family. And so when I came home, I was such a bitter, horrible person, you know, and I dove right back into the drugs. I mean, immediately, you know, I was shooting dope and, you know, running the streets. So then I went and got my CDL, and I tried to turn my life around, thought things were getting better. And I tried to do a little sobriety, you know, just on my own. Of course, that shit don't work. And, you know, so then I had a lady in my life, and she had a child. And she was pregnant with mine, and somehow we lost the baby. I don't know. You know, 5 months in, we lost the baby. And I went on a binge. I was on a month-long drunk, and I can't remember anything, a complete, total blackout. I just know the only reason I know I went to work every single day driving a truck is because I had paychecks to prove it, and I can't remember a single thing. And when I snapped out of that, I stopped drinking right then. I knew this was too much. I'm going to kill somebody, you know, and accidentally. You know, not through my anger, but through being, you know, blacked out and behind the wheel of an 18-wheeler, I'm going to run some family over. So I decided to quit drinking, and I thought drinking was my problem, right? So I just stopped that shit. Life's going to get better, you know. But I couldn't put the meth down, and you know, back and forth between jobs, you know, running the streets, and then I went hanging out with those buddies again. You know, I didn't hear from them the whole 9 years I was gone. Not one of them wrote me. Neither one of them wrote me. They didn't call, check up on me, nothing. Those are dope friends. You know, I know that today. And I made the wise decision of going hanging out with them again, you know, and found myself being woken up by the police. I don't know what happened to this day. I know I was left in the middle of East Austin in my truck. And my windows were down. There was a knife in my hand, and there was 6.5 grams of methamphetamines on the dash. And they said I had Ambien in my system. I don't take downers, never have. So, you know, that was a real eye opener for me. And here I am facing 25 to life again, you know, and just, you know, I went out there and just, man, I hit it hard then, you know, living on the streets, sleeping on couches, just trying to do what I can, selling drugs, you know, and collecting drug money, you know, risking my life every day. And by the grace of God, again, I went to court, and they dropped it down, gave me 3 years. And so I went back to prison, and this time I changed. Something changed in me. I don't know what it is. I just know that change came about. You know, I got down there and I was like, man, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of seeing all these same dudes. I'm tired of not having somebody in my life. I'm tired of living wearing these whites, you know, and which is kind of crazy because I usually don't wear white, but I just happen to have one today. But when I got down there, I started getting to AA there. And I've been in and out of these rooms since 1988, you know, usually by the judge's orders. But when I was in prison, I had a change in my heart. And I was actually in the church choir in prison. It's kind of crazy, right? You know, and so I started doing the AA thing, and I thought I really had it together. You know, I was like, man, I've got this, man. I'm going to go home. I'm going to go be successful, and things are going to be great. And then right before I came home, I was talking to my dad on the phone, and I come from a very, very well-off family, believe it or not. And I don't look like it, but I do. And so I was talking to my dad on the phone. My dad says, hey, listen, you know, we're going to give you and your sister a gift. And I said, oh, okay, yeah, cool, whatever. You know, well, it's a lot of money. I was like, oh, don't give me no money. You know, shit, that's the last thing I need, you know, because usually if I got $20 in my pocket, I'm going to see the dope man, you know, and my dad, you know, he's a normie, and he says, son, you're old enough now, you're 35 years old, you got this lick, you just know don't do drugs. And I'm like, yeah, that's going to work. I said, Dad, you can't do this. It was six figures, you know, and for somebody that's been living on the streets and doing dope and drinking and partying, and you're going to hand me $150,000? No way. You know, you're going to find me in a flea bag hotel somewhere, you know, with three women of ill repute and needles hanging out of my arms. You know, I'm going to be dead. This ain't going to work. And I had enough sense of mind to say that. And my dad convinced me, no, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. Okay, so that was 2013. I got out, and that was handed to me. Ooh, well, that was a crazy couple of years till 2015. And today, now, that money's all gone. I smoked all that up. And, you know, I was running the streets. I met this girl that, man, I was just madly in love with, you know. And I met her in the dope world. You know, I knew that was not going to come to anything good, and sure as shit it didn't, you know. And, you know, it took me a long time to walk away from it, because I was so broken inside that, you know, here's somebody that just wants to, that says she loves me, you know, that her words were that she loved me, but her actions were something totally different, you know. And, but my messed up mind says, okay, this is love. Okay, I got this. Yeah, it doesn't matter that she's hit me in the head with a piece of metal. Yeah, you love me, right? You know? And, you know, and it was a really crazy ride, man. I am very blessed to even be here today. You know, I was doing enough dope to kill a man, you know? And there's some people that have seen me do it, you know? And Graham shots, thinking, I want to die. I really wanted to die, but I was too coward. You know, I'm remembering there's kids in the room. I was too coward to take my own life. So here I am. I'll just fit as much as I can in this needle and see how that goes. You know, and people were scared to be around me, because they would look at me and I'd do this. I'd be like, you know, and it was crazy, man. You know, I really did want to die. You know, I didn't like life. I didn't like people. I didn't like myself. You know, I would tear my face apart. You know, I'd get high and I'd look in a mirror, and I just hated myself so much that I would just tear my face apart. Just horrible, horrible images, you know. And anything I'm saying, you could times it times 10, and that's probably how bad it really was. You know, and back and forth between the streets, living in my car. You know, here I am. I got six figures in the bank, but I'm living in my car. You know, because I'm a felon. I can't go get a place. You know, I've got to find somebody that's willing to rent it to me without checking my background. You know, and the lifestyle was really crazy, and I got to a point where I was ready to stop. I really was, you know. I had promised myself so many times I did not want to get high. You know, I even asked my ex old lady, I said, I tell her, hey, let's go get clean. And she at least she was honest, you know. She was like, shit, I'm not ready. Oh, well, then I'm not either, hell, you know. Shit, I love you. We're gonna ride this till the wheels fall off, you know, even though it's got three flats right now, you know. I'm just saying, hey, So then, and that was a really crazy relationship, because not only was I abused, which is a crazy thing to say, but I was abused in that relationship, physically, mentally, emotionally. I became the abuser, you know. It became that became almost like a second drug to me. You know, we would have this knockdown, drag out fight, blood coming out and everything, and then, you know, the makeup afterwards, you know, and I mean, it was fun, but it was real crazy, you know, and then I finally got enough fortitude inside myself to leave, and I said, I'm done. I'm just done. I'm tired of trying to drag you with me, you know. I'm gonna go do this for me, because it's time for me to love myself, you know. And my family had given up on me. Nobody, man, my truck broke down on the side of the road. I was out there for 5 days, man, working on this truck. My sister lived less than a mile away. I called her and I said, Debbie, listen, I'm broke, I'm hungry, I'm broke down on the side of the road. I don't have any cigarettes. Can you please come rescue me? She said, yeah, I'll be there in a little bit. I'm like, oh, man, thank you, God. She shows up. She brings me a little Wendy's hamburger, 10 cigarettes, and a bottle of water and tells me have a good life and drove off. And, man, I sat there and broke down like a, And I was like, man, dude, am I such a monster that my only sibling would do that to me? You know, and really, in reality, it was me doing it to myself. You know, she didn't allow me at her house because of the things I've done and the way I acted and, you know, me talking about the alien frogs that are outside, you know, and, yeah, you know, I woke up one day and I said, you know, I'm going to go down to what's that place called? Osar. And I'm going to check out for funding, you know. I'm just going to do it. And I was high as a kite when I went and did it, you know. And the doors started opening for me. And it was really crazy because, you know, they say you got to go up and sign up. Then you got to go call a few people. And then you got to wait for a bid. And it didn't happen for me that way. I went to go talk to her. And she was like, okay, well, we have to schedule for a meeting. But I got time right now if you want to talk right now. And I'm like, no, I want to go out there so I can go get high and come back. No, of course, let's talk. Yeah. And so she gave me three phone numbers, and I called him immediately. And the very next morning, this guy Jeff calls me, and he says, Danny, can you be here at 10 o'clock in the morning? I was like, where are you at? And he's like, well, I'm down in Freeport, Texas. I was like, I have no idea where that's at, but if it's in Texas, I can be there within, you know, 8 to 12 hours. And So I'll be there at 10 o'clock in the morning. He's like, okay. I said, do you have parking? He goes, yeah. So for the last 6 months prior to this, I had been dragging my Harley around on a trailer behind my truck everywhere I went. Whether I went to the grocery store or if I went, it didn't matter where it was. That trailer and that Harley were bolted down. I had these huge chains on it, you know, because everybody's trying to steal it, you know how that goes. And and the stupid thing hadn't ran in like 2 years. You know, I'd wrecked it and broke my leg. And it was really crazy because he says, yeah, I got parking. I said, good, okay, because I got my trailer and my Harley. Oh, no, you're going to have to choose. You either got to bring the truck or the Harley, but you can't bring both. I was like, well, the bike doesn't run. Yeah, I think I'm going to bring the truck. And so I called my dad, and who didn't want to talk to me at all. He just would not, you know. And I called him. I said, hey, Dad, I don't want nothing from you. I want you to come have lunch with me. And, you know, that's how I opened the phone call. Not hi, Dad. Not how you doing? Hey, Dad, I don't want nothing from you. I just want you to come have lunch with me. So he comes over and meets me for lunch, and he says, you still dragging that piece of shit around? And I'm like, yeah, Dad, it's not a piece of shit. It's my baby, you know? And, I said, well, that's why I asked you to come up here. I'm going to leave it with you. And he's like, no, you're not. Take that to the dump, you know? And I'm like, no, listen, Dad, I'm going to rehab in the morning. And you're either going to take this or I'm going to leave it in this parking lot and somebody can have it for free. And that action right there was, I believe, enough to show my dad that I was serious. You know, he's like, okay, I'll take it. So off to rehab I went. It took me 3 days to get there. And, yeah. 3 days, 4 hours away. And it was real crazy. It was a great place. It was nothing as fancy as this. You know, this was like a little rundown place. They were screaming every day about maybe shutting down because of funding, and you know, and but there were some really awesome counselors there. And I met some really awesome people that were just like me, you know. I found my people, you know. I found people that were, you know, and they came from all walks of life. And I still talk to my roommates to this day, you know. That was 2015. So while I was there, I had a counselor that wanted to really, I don't know, she wanted me to get honest or something, you know. So we dove into my life, you know, and there's a few things I forgot to mention, but I had a ex that killed herself, and And it was really crazy because it was when I broke up with her, you know. And, you know, I broke up with her on Sunday. By Wednesday, she was dead. And, you know, I didn't even realize that it affected me. That's how cold I was. You know, I'm like, well, you know. And then me and this counselor are talking, and we're getting to the bottom of stuff, you know. And she's like, nah, there's still more. I'm like, nah, there ain't. She goes, there's something. I'm like, no, life's good. She's like, okay. I want you to write some essays. And I was like, oh, man. So then I had to go back to my room and think about things. And I started thinking about, I really gave it some thought, you know. And I'm working my steps, and I'm trying to get into things. And I'm going, oh, shit. Yeah, you know, that. Let me ask her about this. So I asked her. I was like, you know, one of my exes killed herself, you know. You think that could be it? And she's like, yeah, you know, and because I was holding that responsibility in my heart. I took it personally that she had done that, you know, and I'd never really dealt with it, never dealt with that pain. I never, you know, I'm an addict. I don't deal with shit, you know. If I feel squirrely, I go get high, and then I don't have to feel squirrely no more. Now I'm just high. I don't know what the hell I feel, you know, and. While I was at the rehab and we were dealing with this, it was like the clouds parted, you know. Things were starting to get better in my mind. You know, my life still sucked, but my mind was getting clearer. You know, at one point I'd went and asked a doctor to diagnose me because I thought I was paranoid schizophrenic. You know, the last ex had actually convinced me that I was. You know, and through all these crazy antics. So I go down there and I talk to him. He's like, come back to me after you go get clean, you know, and we'll talk. Well, I never went back to him. I don't have those paranoid delusions anymore. I don't have the, you know, I don't see and hear things. I don't think the government's after me, you know. You know, nobody's sabotaging my phone. That's the crazy thing, you know. I've had a same phone for almost 2 years now. And, yeah, it's crazy, right? And, you know, life's gotten pretty good. You know, when I came home from rehab, I flipped a truck and I flipped it 4 times and was ejected from the truck, almost lost my life, you know, walked away with two staples in my head, man. That's it. You know, if that's not a God thing, I don't know what the heck is, man. You know, I wrecked my Harley, almost bled out and died. You know, I've had a lot of these incidences. I tried to attempt suicide over at my ex's house. I had bought this car, and I went over to her house, and of course she had some dude up there in her room, and she came out here, you know, and talked to me, and you know, I was ready. I didn't want to tell her. I just told her goodbye. Told her I loved her, you know, and she was like, yeah, fuck you, you know. Excuse me, sorry, and you know, and. And so she went upstairs, and when she went upstairs, I went about duct taped in my windows all shut on my car, and I ran hoses into my trunk, and I taped it all up, and I started my car, and I climbed in, and I laid the seat back, and made my peace, and was ready to go. That was at excuse me, that was at 10 o'clock at night. At 8 o'clock. At 8 o'clock in the morning, they found me. The firemen found me in the car, still running. My oxygen levels were out of there. They thought I was dead. And they pulled me out of the car and took me to the psych ward. And, you know, for some reason, God spared my life, and I don't know why, you know. And so when I came home from rehab, I was very determined in my mind to turn things around. So when I came home, I started getting into going to work. I thought that would fix everything, you know, if I just worked my ass off, you know. So I did for the next couple of years. I really worked hard and had some really good jobs. Started making a lot of money. You know, not that really means anything, but you know, it's nice to have it when you're not used to it, you know. And I still found life was still screwed up for me, man. Just, you know, my family still didn't want to hear nothing I had to say, man. I couldn't have called them and asked them for a cup of coffee, you know. And that's because of my past. That's all the things that I've done. So so then I had a friend that called me, and she said that she was sober, and I had seen it on Facebook that she was sober. And she called me and asked me to start going to a rehab center with her and taking a meeting, you know. And that was a really cool part of my life, man, because for the first time in my life, I started doing things for other people, you know, because that didn't benefit me at all, you know. I had to work the next morning, you know. I don't want to be out till 9 o'clock at night, and which is crazy because that's when I used to go out at night. But, yeah, right, you know. And I started going to this rehab, and I started making a commitment to myself and to them that I would be there every week. And it was really good. But I still wasn't dealing with shit, man. I still wasn't, you know, I didn't have a sponsor, you know. I was half stepping the program. I was, you know, on the outside it looked great, man. It looked like life was getting awesome, and it pretty much was. But on the inside I still was kind of broken. I still was just kind of, you know, walking through life with, you know, tripping on my own shoelaces, and I wear pull-up boots, you know. And so I found myself one weekend hanging out with my family for one of the few first times. And, you know, our families will make us feel like shit, you know. They really will, you know, because they don't understand. You know, they just think we've been making bad choices and that we could have changed this, you know, 30 years ago. You know, I couldn't have changed it. You know, those choices were there. You know, I took the easy road out, sure, getting high, but, you know, then it became a necessity. You know, that became a way of life. And so I'm hanging out with my family, and they made me feel about this small. And I knew something was up. I knew it. I knew it in my heart, you know. And so I was trying to, here I am trying to remember all the stuff from AA, right? And I'm like, oh man, I don't remember half of it because I've never done the program, you know. I just kind of showed up, threw a dollar in the basket, drank a cup of coffee, talk about, yeah, I'm sober today, and then left and then went and did my thing, you know. And as my family were making me feel that way, you know, my reaction was, I need to go to a meeting. That's the one thing I remember out of the program was, I need to catch a meeting now. Not tonight, not tomorrow, now. So I had good intentions, but I didn't have the backing of all the knowledge of the program to help execute that in a positive way. So here I go to this meeting I never go to, where nobody knows me, so nobody's gonna know that I'm all squirrely right now. You know, and so I catch this meeting, and you know, and I'm an addict, so I'm self-centered, right? And so I'm in this meeting, and I'm like, y'all should know that I'm wanting to go get high. Why the hell y'all don't know this? You know, and so I didn't get a chance to speak in the meeting. It was a really crazy meeting, and so then I went outside to hang out with people. I'm like, okay, somebody's going to come up and talk to me. You know, somebody's going to come save me. You know, so I'm standing out there, and then nobody's coming to talk to me. I'm standing out there smoking cigarettes with everybody, and they're all talking in their little clique groups, and nobody's saying anything. And I'm like, you know what? Screw this place. I'm out of here. I find myself at the ex's house, getting high. I smoked a couple, I don't know, maybe one and a half, two bowls, and was out of my mind. Like I'd never stopped. And all I did was smoke, and it felt like I had just done a big old shot. And I'm like, what the hell? What am I doing? You know, and in this time, this is kind of hard for me. In this time, I'd met a lady that's really awesome lady, man. She's a normie. And she took care of me in the hospital when I was in there with pneumonia. And, you know, and here I am at my ex's house. You know, this is screwed up, you know. And that little voice inside my head's telling me, man, what are you doing, dude? You've worked too hard to get to where you're at. And so I did something that I've never done before in any of my relapses. I went home and I showed up, and I actually live about 10 minutes from here in these back roads. And I get over there, and you know, she doesn't know about dope. You know, she doesn't know why I'm out there at 3 o'clock in the morning mowing the lawn, trying to figure out how I'm going to come inside the house and tell her that I am high, that I just threw away, you know, over 18 months of sobriety, you know, in one bad choice. And of course, she's blowing my phone up, you know, and it's sitting over at the truck. So I'm over here so I can pretend like I didn't hear it. And she comes outside, it was the most awesome thing, because she said, "What's going on?" I said, "I got high." And, you know, I'm so used to the judgment of my family and, you know, the normies in my life that I'm thinking that she's going to be like, "Oh, you know what? I'm done. I can't believe this. You're such a failure, you know?" And she looked at me and she said, "What do we do now?" And I went, "What? You serious?" Yeah, I was ready to have to come pack my bags and, you know, and it's my house, and I was going to leave, you know? Crazy. Yeah, you know? And that was a really awesome opportunity for me, because that gave me a chance to see how far I've really come, you know? Because usually my relapses end up with nobody seeing me for 6 to 8 months, maybe a couple of years if I got busted, you know, maybe a whole decade if I went and did something really stupid, you know? And this time it was just a few hours, you know? And I had clarity of mind to stop it. You know, I didn't let that be it was a stumble, but man, it wasn't a fall, you know? And now, you know, I go to AA now. My home group is Cherry Creek. I've got a home group. And I have a sponsor, kind of. He's about to leave, so I'm now in the process of trying to find a new one. You know, he's not left yet, but, you know, it's really crazy. And when I relapsed, I didn't have a sponsor. You know, I had a sponsor, but, you know, he was 90 years old. He's been sober like 30-something years. He no longer goes to meetings. He says, "Yeah, man, you get to a point, you don't need them things." And I'm like, "Okay, well, I'll try it your way. I mean, you've been sober 30 years. I mean, you know, must be doing something right, you know?" And, well, that didn't work for me. That shit didn't work for me. And so when I relapsed, I went back to my home group, and my friend tells me, she says, "You got to tell the group, you know, this is your home. This is your family." And I was like, "Man, damn, again, you know, now I got to, all right. Yeah, you're right. So I did. And through her guidance, you know, she encouraged me to go get a sponsor. I did. And things have been going great since, man. Since I first went to rehab in 2015, my life has turned a total 360, man. You know, I went from living in my car in a Walmart parking lot to I've got 12 acres. I've got a nice house. I've got a nice lady. I go hang out with my family, man. You know, when I was a kid, I never would hang out with them. And so it's really crazy for me as an adult to be hanging out with my mom and dad. You know, we go out on Wednesday nights together and have family night. We always go to dinner every Wednesday night now. You know, and that's such an awesome thing, because, you know, when I was younger, I hated them. I hated everybody, you know. So I didn't give them a chance to be close to me. And now today, as a you know, at 43 years old, I'm building those relationships, you know, and that's all because of the work that I've been putting in with AA and with my conscious contact with my God, you know, and man, he's been opening doors for me that should have been shut a long time ago. Right before I went to rehab, me and the ex had gotten into a fight, and she was hitting me in the head with a piece of metal. That's why I said that earlier. And we're walking down 1626. And she had left her car at the red light, and in the car is some dope. And that was one of the times I was telling her, "I'm done with you. Keep the dope. See ya." You know, she's like, you know, whatever. And so I'm walking away, and she's hitting me with the metal. And the cops come, and they said that they got a report that there was a woman beating a man, you know. And, yeah, it was pretty comical, you know. And I'm literally walking down the street with my hands up like this, going, "I'm not touching her," you know. And she's just cling, cling. And the cops start grabbing her. And, of course, you know, I'm I'm still in my addiction. So, you know, I'm high as hell. And they're grabbing her, and I'm like, you know, all of a sudden, I forget that I'm mad at her. You know, and I'm like, what are you doing to my old lady? You got me messed up, you know? And, yeah, right? And so lo and behold, I end up in jail. And I'm facing another 25 to life case again for the dope that was in her car a block down the street. And, you know, when I was paranoid, I thought the cops were all after me, right? And if I needed proof of it, this incident was it, you know, because they took the dope out of the car and said they pulled it out of my pocket. And so here I am in jail, and by the grace of God, I don't know how, but I got out on a PR bond. Dude, I've never had a PR bond, ever. You know what I mean? And so I'm out, and that, you know, it's crazy, right? And so that case was just settled last year, January of last year, and they dropped the dope charge because of the video. But, I mean, they were serious about sending me back. And by the grace of God, man, they gave me 30 days in jail for attempted resisting arrest with a deadly weapon because I had a knife in my pocket, whatever, you know. But I was happy to take 30 days. I'm like, yeah, 30 days, dude? I'm gonna sleep and eat Johnny Sacks all day, you know? And y'all don't even need to worry about moving me nowhere. Leave me downtown. It's cool. So I get down there, and they're like, okay, well, you got 30 days to turn yourself in. I'm like, man, what the hell is going on here, man? You know, nobody ever lets me turn myself in, you know? Usually they're coming with stormtroopers and shit coming through the door, you know? And lo and behold, I get down there and turn myself in and set everything up with work so I don't lose my job. And I get down there and they're like, okay, well, you got 5 days to serve. I'm like, whatever. Okay. I'm not gonna argue with you. I'm not trying to stay longer. And so they let me out. And, you know, so these are the doors that have been opening for me, man. You know, God has just been blessing me, man, with, you know, I have a good job, and then through no fault of my own, the company shuts down, and immediately I have a new job, you know, a good job again. And then they screw me over through no fault of my own again, and I get another job. I have a job the same day, you know, and I'm finding that as I keep doing the next right thing, the next right door opens for me, you know. It's not so much work for me today, you know. It's still work in the program, but life is not so much work, you know. Life hasn't been real peachy for me. There's a lot of blessings, but there's been a lot of hardships too, you know. My lady was involved in a really horrible traffic accident with an 18-wheeler in October. I spent almost a month in the hospital with her. You know, and that was a blessing because I've never cared about anybody enough to go sit in the hospital with you and change your bedpan for you or to wipe you after you're done using the bathroom. You know, it was a very humbling experience for me. And, you know, my uncle just passed away from pancreatic cancer. And, you know, I had the opportunity to go sit with him in the hospital as he was dying and spend some clear moments with him, you know, and, you know, get to say some goodbyes to somebody. And it's crazy when that happens because now I lost somebody and yeah, and it hurts, but now I'm not dealing with having to deal with the loss because I just dealt with it with him. I went through it with him. You know, I was able to go to Iowa and be a pallbearer for him in his funeral. And, that was amazing for me because, nobody would have ever asked me to do that, you know, for the last 40 years, you know. And, but, you know, and life still sucks. Just sucks a lot less, you know. I mean, really, you know. This program has changed my life. It really has, you know. My constant prayers with the Lord every day. You know, I wake up every morning and I can look in the mirror today and I can go, man, pretty cool, dude. You know, you know, and there's some people in this room that'll tell you that I was a really angry person. You know, I probably never had a smile on my face. I know dope dealers that wouldn't let me come to their house because they were not sure what was going to happen. You know, I was a loose cannon, you know, and I could send anybody I wanted to get the dope, but I could not personally go get it, you know. And now today, you know, I have people that come up to me and they're like, man, you're an inspiration. I'm like, me? You know, man, it ain't me, man. It's, you know, I thank the Lord above, you know, and this program, because now, even after the relapse, man, I've delved back into doing my steps. You know, I've started them all over again, and I'm getting honest with myself again, you know, I'm even bringing up shit that I already know I dealt with, but I just want to be clear that it's dealt with, you know, because I don't want to relapse again. I really don't. I don't have the obsession to go get high every day is not there. I have some days when shit's not going well and I'm like, no, you know, but I have to think about it, you know, and life has gotten really good for me. And I appreciate y'all allowing me to come up here and share it with y'all. Thanks.